We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
We're here to talk about all of the things that have been going on in the media in the last, week or so, couple of weeks, that have seemingly missed the attention of the public at large. Something that would have never gone unnoticed 20, 30, 40 years ago. Something that maybe would have brought people out into the streets with pitchforks and torches. Something that would have just turned the country upside down several decades ago. It has just seemed to be completely just left all importance behind. It is being picked up, but it's hardly being picked up at all by the mainstream media, and we think that it's huge here. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante, and I'm joined here tonight by Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots. And Cindy and I have been having this discussion pretty hotly over the last several days about something that the president said. Last week, right before we went on the air last week, the president decided to just boldly put it out there. He's not constrained by the Constitution. Checks and balances don't mean anything to this guy. He's got a pen, he's got a phone, and he's going to do as he damn well pleases. And you hear, it's almost, not quite, but it's almost crickets across this great nation. Even on the so-called conservative news media outlets, you hear very little about it. And Cindy, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
It's the I've Got a Pen statement. I'm going to play it for you right now.
Okay.
We've got a lot to do in 2014. As I've said before, there's going to be a year of action. We've seen the economy improve. We want to maximize the pace of our recovery, but most importantly, we want to make sure that every American is able to benefit from that recovery. We are not just going to be waiting for legislation in order to make sure that we're providing Americans the kind of help that they need. I've got a pen, and I've got a phone, and I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions and administrative actions that move the ball forward. We need all hands on deck to build on the recovery that we're already seeing. The economy is improving, but it can be improving even faster. A lot of people are doing better than they were in the depths of the recession, but there's still a lot of folks who need help. I am absolutely confident that in 2014, if we're all working in the same direction, not worrying so much about political points, but worrying much more about getting the job done.
Unfreaking believable.
It is unbelievable.
I mean, I don't know where to even begin. Well, first of all, I don't know how many people are doing better now than they were in the depths of the recession, because I don't believe that people are doing better now than they were. I think we are neck deep in almost a depression now. I think they've been lying to us about all the numbers, the recovery numbers, the job numbers.
Sure.
I think all that's been a lie. But you know, I think that Obama is intentionally leading us down the toilet.
Oh, absolutely.
These statements to me prove nothing more than all you have to do, if you have the platform, is to just say whatever it is that you want to say, put it out there in the universe, and the people suck it up with a straw. What do you think, Cindy?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, first of all, people should be outraged, and they should be in the streets with pitchforks. Probably a lot of people haven't heard this statement, but they're ignoring a plethora of evidence from the past that this is the way he operates. You know, and to me, Lisa, one of the things that really strikes me and that I thought of immediately was this is simply an in-your-face dictator willing to circumvent the Constitution and ignore the authority of the legislative branch as the sole lawmaking branch of government to push forward the agenda that he wants to push. And that is worldwide known as a dictatorship. You know, under our Constitution, his pen is limited under to signing into law or not legislation sent to his desk by Congress. That's it. That's all he's supposed to be able to do. And you know, I don't want anybody saying, well, but other presidents have done it. Two wrongs don't make
no,
a right.
They haven't done
and
it to this extent.
It's time for the American people to be absolutely incensed by this kind of action because it's wrong. And it is now leading us down the path of a dictatorship. And if we don't rise up and we do not scream bloody murder, then we deserve what we're going to get. And, you know, and the other thing, Lisa, I don't know if you know this, but on that statement was made on the 14th of January in a cabinet meeting attended by the press. Then on the 15th of January, the day, next day, he doubled down on that threat in a meeting with his the Senate Democrats. And he said that he told the Senate Democrats he plans to use his executive authority to act in 2014 when Congress stands in his way. This was the AP carried this story. Obama met with the senators from his party, and the White House says Obama and Democrats discussed proposals to raise the minimum wage in efforts to pass a comprehensive immigration overhaul, education initiatives, and job measures. And the White House says Obama wants to work with Congress to make progress, but will also act on his own to get things done if they won't cooperate.
Amazing. Absolutely. Yep. And so
he didn't just say that. We have recorded what was recorded, but then he turned around the very next day and he doubled down. And there were a few media outlets that covered this, these statements, the day of and the day after he made these statements. I know Fox News did, The Blaze did, Glenn Beck did. You know, there were a few media, and actually, quite frankly, so did MSNBC, ABC. They all carried the sound bite.
Yeah, if it was on the AP, everybody had it.
Correct.
So,
and so it begs the question.
Yeah, what does
people,
that tell you?
Where are you?
I know. What does that tell you about the culture now? That, I mean, you can make a statement like that. I think it brings up a lot of questions. The President of the United States can make a statement that, hey, you know, I am not bound by the Constitution. I'm going to do what I damn well please, and I really don't care what you think.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me that you have not given me free rein with a full Democratic legislature. I'm going to do what I want to do, regardless of the House of Representatives or the Senate. So,
right.
And the people. And nobody's listening. Nobody cares. There's no uprising in the streets. We already know by now. We're smart enough. We've learned by now that the mainstream media is not going to thwart his agenda. They're not going to push back hard on a Democratic president. We understand that, and we don't expect it. Okay, but there should be enough people across this country. Some in the conservative media, not many. But where are the people? Oh, excuse me, I have a cold. My voice is cracking. Where are the people? There should be pitchforks and torches in the streets.
Right.
People should be, you know, ripping the sideboards off of the White House. And nobody is saying anything about it. There's nobody in the Missouri State Legislature crying over it. There's nobody pushing back at a state level I mean, so what does that mean? Does it mean that nobody cares, or does it mean that there is so much ignorance out there that nobody?
You know, I think that people are falling into I think that people are falling into four groups, Lisa, and maybe I'm being a bit, you know, narrow in how I'm going to do this, but I think that we have people who are just indifferent and apathetic. They just don't care. They don't care about politics. They don't care what they're doing. They are so involved in their daily lives, and they are so used to being Americans mm-hmm. and living in a country where they believe this kind of thing, that dictators have no sway over them, that they can do whatever they darn well please, and nobody's ever going to put a stop to it. And they're just indifferent to being involved in the process, to paying attention to what the politicians are doing, to seeing the danger signs. They just don't care. Then you've got a group of people that support this, and those people typically belong to communist organizations and or other subversive organizations that have been seeking for a long time to overthrow our government from within. Their goal is to make us a communist nation, and that's their end game. They support the tenets of communism, and that's what they want, and that's what they've pushed for. And they're very angry. They hate our Constitution because it stood in their way for 200 years. Then you have another group of people, and I believe this is where the majority of the people fall, that have been reeducated and programmed through the media and so forth and the public education system in such a way that they no longer even know what our form of government is or how they're supposed to be represented. And in that third group of people, you also have the indifferent, apathetic people. And it leads to that indifference and apathy because people just don't know what to do about it because they aren't educated enough to understand that they do have options. And then you've got the fourth group of people, us, we see the handwriting on the wall. We've educated ourselves. We've gotten past the reprogramming. And you know what? People may be offended that are sitting out there about being told that they've been reprogrammed and that our education system has dumbed them down and taught them to think this way. It has. That's the truth. And I could fight, and that's for a different show, but it has happened, and I can support what I'm saying. The thing about it is that, and I can admit that I, too, have suffered from that reprogramming to a very big extent. And I've had to reeducate myself, and I've been willing to do that. And that's what Americans are going to have to be willing to do. And those of us who do know better are going to have to keep, as frustrating as it may be, we have to keep something the message at people. We've got to keep pounding it into them. And, you know, some of them, they finally just throw their hands up and say, don't talk to me if that's what you want to talk about. Fine. But, you know, if you're around me, this is what we're going to talk about. And we just have to be willing to be that dogmatic about it. It's so important. But I think that, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong. If you think I'm wrong, am I being too narrow in how I'm breaking this down?
You know, from where we sit, I mean, and we are deeply entrenched in the patriotic bubble. You know, most of our friends and our associates and most of our activity revolves around watching the media, you know, and I can tell you, I have to kind of bring myself back into the reality. We have to understand in this country, there are those of us, it's a small group of us, but there are those of us who are very well informed. We're, you know, this is what we do. We are paying attention. You know, but then you'll talk to people outside of your sphere of influence, and you'll get a new perspective about, you know, the people next door. They're busy taking their kids to soccer practice. They don't get involved in politics because they find it distasteful, so they intentionally turn away from it. For whatever reason, you know, they don't know what's going on, but they, you know, they do, most of them do care. They just find it distasteful for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. But they're not informed. And, you know, I don't quite know how to deal with that because what's it going to take? My next question is, what's it going to take? Because last week I went on a tangent. You know, we've got to, you know, those of us that are inside the sphere of knowledge and understand what's going on, we've got to reach outside our existence here and reach people outside the bubble. You know, we've got to do something. We've got to start putting flyers in people's mailboxes, or we have to start, you know, hanging posters up by the water cooler, slipping notes under people's doors, something. We've got to do something. You know, boots on the ground on the weekend campaigns. I don't know what it is, but you got to start doing something. But I'm telling you, most of these people don't have a clue, and they're not going to have a clue until the pain starts to hit. Now, I don't know if it's going to take There was a great story on the news today. There's a couple major companies. I think Target was one of them. There was another one who just canceled their health care for their employees. Mm-hmm. Because of the way the health care law was written, they were they had to do it, not because they not only could not afford to maintain health care for their employees, but they were also putting their employees in jeopardy of being able to get subsidies, some of them, because they were part-time, they didn't make very much money or whatever. Whenever that pain starts to hit them, I don't know when people are going to start to feel the pain of their constitutional freedoms being pulled from them, because I don't think they know what their constitutional freedoms are, most of them.
Yeah.
You know, they're just, meandering along, yup-da-da-da-da, everything's fine.
There need to be, there are some people, and I happen to know one person in particular, a good friend of mine, who has just gone above and beyond the call of duty, sharing books, just putting a plethora of information, not just that person's words alone, but just the information that's out there, the facts as they are, kind of like we're trying to do on the show tonight, playing the sound bites, and we've got more to play, citing the sources for Obama's statements on this over the past few years, and this person has just all of the things that are surrounding this president going back before his last election. I know that she has put a ton of information out there in the hands of coworkers, friends, Bible study, you name it. She has not failed to reach out over and over and over again, and people have shut her down. And, that's very, very discouraging. And you just reach a point where you just want to throw your hands up and go, I'm done. The thing is, Lisa, is that all of us need to be doing that. And the more of us that do that, the more likely it is that people will start to pay attention. One lone voice doing this on a consistent basis is not going to get the job done. It is going to take a small army of patriots that are willing to put themselves out there and to do this.
Yeah, it's got to be a tidal wave where it's big enough for people to notice. And the thing is, you got to give it to them in a format that they're willing to digest it.
Right.
People
aren't going to tune into Glenn Beck to get this kind of information.
Right.
Most of them aren't tuning into Fox News. And so, we can all say, well, but it was carried here and it was carried there. But like it or not, right, wrong, or indifferent, the majority of people aren't listening to those media outlets. Some of them probably don't even know they exist, to be honest with you. So then the monkey is on our back as friends, neighbors, and family members to get that word out there, to do what this friend of mine that I'm talking about has done consistently for the past 5 years.
Well, I wrote a story on another subject that's going to be published in Politichicks.tv probably this coming week. And one of the aspects in this story was the fact that while the Tea Party movement is strong, it is a force to be reckoned with, but it is still very much a minority party. And one way to measure that is that the people, the majority of the people, are still getting their news from ABC, CBS, and NBC. Millions, in the fourth quarter television news media ratings last year, 1+ million people were getting their media from Fox. The 6+ million people, the rest of them, were getting them from NBC. 6 more million were getting them from CBS. 6 more million were getting them from ABC, yada, yada. I don't remember the exact numbers on that, but it's pretty close. So you've got multi-millions of people still getting, the company line from the Obamacare administration through the mainstream media. They're so misinformed, so malinformed, and you've only got maybe 1 million people getting their news from, and even Fox, I'm telling you, does not always do what they're supposed to do, I think, as far as reporting the conservative news. They do a pretty good job, much better than any other mainstream media outlets, but still, it's not enough. You still have to be informed and engaged. So when you're talking about reaching all of those additional people out there and giving them the real scoop, I run into people all the time who know what I do. They know how engaged and involved I am, but they don't want to talk to me about that kind of stuff. And you can't force it down. You just can't force it. You have to be able to give it to them in bites that they're willing to take. And I have noticed now that people are starting to feel the squeeze, people that are friends of mine that are business owners that are starting to have to deal with Obamacare and insurance and hiring people and having to fire people and lay people off, or people that I know a lot of people that are unemployed who cannot find jobs, you know, and there's a reason for that now. You know, and those are the times that I think that you can start to slip that kind of information in. That's when you can start talking to people. Well, hey, you know, this is what, you know, this happened because, you know, did you hear about policy or these executive orders that Obama signed? And Cindy, you and I were talking right before we went on air. There's another clip I'm going to play here.
Before you play that clip, I want to say something because this I want to touch on something, and I'm going to give it a little bit of background. The last year when Obama did his State of the Union address, one of the things that he touched on in his State of the Union address last year was exactly the same thing. His answer for getting his ambitious second term agenda through a divided Congress was to go around it on climate change, gun control, gay rights, immigration rights, the whole nine yards. The big things that we need to get done, we can't wait on, said a White House senior advisor, Dan Pfeiffer, leading up to his State of the Union address. If we can take action, we will take action. Yeah. And so they've been looking for ways to do that, to circumvent the Congress when they won't cooperate with the agenda that they have. And it goes back to fall of 2011, that time after he lost the Congress became a time that was a paradigm shift, because let's go back and remember that President Obama ran on being against executive orders as a way for a president to get things done. He absolutely tore George Bush up one side and down the other for doing the same thing. And he promised that he wasn't going to do that. And after he lost the Congress and his ability to just ramrod his whole entire agenda through, can anybody say Obamacare? You know, he got frustrated, and he decided, he urged his team to seek actions that the White House could take unilaterally to circumvent Republican opposition. And they branded their independent efforts, We Can't Wait. And the White House rolled out dozens of policies that included raising fuel economy standards, granting legal status to immigrants, reducing student loan payments, preventing prescription drug shortages, jobs for veterans, you name it. He was all doing it with executive power and or through regulatory agencies in the government. And he's not hidden what he's doing, and he's been very upfront about it. And his aides have not even tried to pretend that this president is not willing to completely ignore the Constitution and to completely the word I'm looking for. Of course, this would happen while I'm on the radio.
Well, you see, the authority,
it's an abuse of power. This man has taken this so far that he is abusing his power as president of the United States to get his agenda pushed through.
Well, you know what,
and,
I
know,
find
when you talk
amazing
about the phone, people need to understand the pen is for signing executive orders. The phone is to call on universities, labor organizations, special interest groups, college students, college executives, you name it, to get behind him and help him forge a message to take to the American people to win us over to his agenda. That is exactly what he means when he says he'll use his phone. Now, you talk about an abuse of power for the President of the United States. And he's done it. We've seen him do it, call people into his office. And they come out ready to just roll out the carpet for whatever it is that he wants.
Right, exactly. And the thing that I find so stunning, and it's a culture thing, that I cannot wrap my mind around it. He's Obama, if, you know, everybody says he's a liar, and he is a liar, But he is not lying about what his agenda is, and he never has lied about what his agenda is. And nobody's taken him seriously. When he was elected the first time in 2008, and we're 5 days away from fundamentally transforming America, and nobody really paid attention to it. Nobody understood what it said. Well, it wasn't long after he was elected, we finally got, we got it. We started to understand what he meant by fundamentally transforming America. And everything that he said along those lines, he followed up with. And he started this We Can't Wait program. When did you tell me? In 2011.
2011, right, in fall of 2011.
And this video has been on his website since then.
And you're going to play that clip in a minute, but I want to add something else, too, that people need to keep in mind. This president has surrounded himself with forethought and deliberately with the most radical of radicals in this country to help him forge an agenda and push it through. And he has people who have nothing but disdain for our form of government, for our Constitution, for the liberties of the American people, and for the American people. They have nothing but disdain for us or this country. And they want to see us brought to our knees, and they want to see this president's agenda forged because it's their agenda. This is not just Barack Obama's agenda. If he was all alone in this, he would never get it done. But he's not all alone in it.
Right. He's not.
And that is key for people to understand. It is not just Barack Obama pushing this agenda. And he has put people in high places that are arguably more radical than he is. But he did. The Can't Wait campaign or program or whatever you want to call it, he instituted that. And it's been on the WhiteHouse.gov website for 2 years.
Well, let's play that clip and let's listen to it.
When I addressed a joint session of Congress about our jobs crisis, I said I intend to do everything in my power right now to act on behalf of the American people with or without Congress. We can't wait for Congress to do its job. So where they won't act, I will. We've been taking a series of executive actions. We couldn't just wait for Congress to fix No Child Left Behind. We went ahead and decided, let's give states the flexibility they need to meet higher standards for our kids and improve our schools. We said we can't wait for Congress to help small businesses. We're going to go ahead and say to the federal government, pay small businesses faster if they're contractors, so they've got more money and they can start hiring more people. We said we're not going to wait for Congress to fix what's going on in our healthcare system. We eliminated regulations that will save hospitals and patients billions of dollars. And we announced a new initiative to make it easier for veterans to get jobs, putting their skills to work in hospitals and community centers. We announced a new policy that will help families whose home values have fallen to refinance their mortgages and to save up to thousands of dollars a year. I directed my administration to send me a new national tourism strategy focused on creating jobs. And some of America's most successful business leaders have signed up to help. All these steps aren't going to take the place of the needed action that Congress has to get going on. But these executive actions we're taking can make a difference. Steps that can save you money and make government more efficient and responsive and help heal this economy. And I told my administration, we're going to look every single day to figure out what we can do without Congress. What can we do without them? I've got an obligation to act on behalf of the American people. And I'm not going to stand by while a minority in the Senate puts party ideology ahead of the people that we were elected to serve. Not with so much at stake, not at this make or break moment for middle class America. We're not going to let that happen.
Is that amazing or what?
Oh,
I mean, where do you start with that? You didn't get a chance to hear it today, but it's just amazing. Yeah,
I had not heard this clip, Lisa, until now because I couldn't get it to play on my computer. I kept getting an error. But in listening to this, I don't know. I felt like I was being transported back to I felt like I was being transported back to Germany in the 30s and to a mustached man who we turned out to be an absolute heinous individual, and this was the type of thing he did. And this president is laying, has been laying, and is continuing to lay the groundwork. And remember, this is from 2 years ago, and the White House put this video together. This is their video.
I know it.
This is in the montage that we put together. They did it. Am I sounding a little wigged out here? But what occurs to me is this president is absolutely laying the groundwork for a dictatorship, and he is handing to the American people emotional reasons that they should go along with him. He's going to make it better for them. Congress is irrelevant, and if they can't be relevant, then we don't need them. The heck with the Constitution. The heck with anything. This is about you and what you elected us to get done, and if they won't do it, I'll do it for you.
Okay, think about
and
how
I'll give you everything you want,
is.
Jobs and this, and that. And we know that that's not what he's doing, but that's what the American people believe he's doing because they haven't been touched yet.
Yeah. Well, think about how far-reaching that
is. What is going to happen.
Because when the hammer comes down, think about all of these useful idiots that he's had with him this whole time, these people that are cheering in the background as he's speaking, you know, we don't need Congress, yeah. We're not going to wait for Congress, yeah. Well, think about that, okay? So when all of these people, when everything falls apart, you know, and if you believe that the revolution is coming, think about what that's going to do to the world.
Right.
Think about how, I mean, he's got every, I mean, you know, they've bought the ammo up, they've got the tanks in place, they've got, it's all ready to roll. It's like Hitler all over again. It's exactly what you said. It's like Hitler all over again. And
it
these
is.
People, I mean, it just, and if you go and try to speak that way outside of the bubble, you know, even some people inside the bubble think you're a little radical, but if you go outside of the bubble and you start talking to people about, you know, martial law, you know?
Well, okay, so you don't go out there and accuse them of being Hitler. What you do is you go out and say, did you hear what the president said? Can I send you a clip of this? You need to listen to this. And then when you talk to them again, you go, now, look, this is what our Constitution says. And let's remember, and this is how I'd approach it with them, let's remember that we reelect presidents every 4 years.
Right.
We reelect Congress every 4 years. The senators are reelected every 6 years. So our government, people who have the power in our government theoretically have a limited time to serve. And so, and presidents definitely, because they are subject to term limits, at least up till this point. And so, fine, you think this president is doing you good, but do you want the next president who doesn't agree with his agenda or your agenda or what you think you want and isn't going to do it your way and give you the goodies you want, do you really want that president to be, are you going to support him when he does this? Because what's the difference?
Yep, I don't know.
You know, so when we're talking to people, we need to, for lack of a better term, since they're not on page yet, they don't see the big picture yet, we have to bring it to the level that they're at. And just start by asking questions. Man, did you hear what the president said? It really concerned me. I want you to listen to this. See what you think. And then initiate a conversation. And you know, that sounds so laborious, Lisa. But to all of the patriots that may hear this or not, but the few that do, spread the word. We have to start engaging our society. The media isn't going to do it for us. You know, movies and television, they're not going to do it for us. Your next-door neighbor's not going to do it for you. Government surely isn't going to do anything to educate you. The people in power are not going to do anything to stop this. And so it is up to us, the individual, we the people. And I still believe in my heart that we the people, the little man, that we are the ones with the power to change what's happening.
Well, I mean, that's what it's going to take. Government's gotten so big. And, you know, you can talk about bringing the sovereignty back to the states. You know, you can talk about you know, voting in a Republican Senate in 2014, 2016. You can talk about all of those things, but the issue is you're going to have to bring a larger rebellion, and I'm not talking about a violent rebellion, but I'm talking about a rebellion within the people.
Right.
You're going to have to give people back the power to vote, to give them back their own personal power where they think that their vote makes a difference, because you cannot change the system from within. It's going to require a major bloodletting.
And you know what, Lisa, you can't, even if we could pass some things for states' rights and return some of that power, if we do not re-educate, and not re-educate, educate the American people about what our form of government really is, what it means, what their responsibilities are, what government is there to do and not do, which most of it is not do, and get people re-educated to what our country really is, to educate them on what our history and what we're really supposed to be and what the function of government truly is. Until we do that, we can't change what's happening, because the people, we've got 50% of Americans are entitlement minded. And so when we hear those people applauding Obama in the background during that speech, what we're hearing are the entitlement people with this entitlement mentality who believe that the government is supposed to take care of them. And I believe that the most recent numbers on that is we're just about split now 50-50 in this country on that particular.
Yeah, we may be behind you.
And until we re-educate people about the right function of government, and that it is not government's place to take care of you, and you really don't want government taking care of you, because if they take care of you, they are going to rule you, and someday that is going to be at the cost of whips and chains around the necks of your children, and whips across, chains on their necks and whips on their backs. That's how that ends. That's the end game for that kind of thinking.
Yeah. I mean, just think about that. People's financial wealth in the middle class is going to be confiscated. All of these, you know, you're going to be doing the government's work. You're not going to be working at your jobs anymore. You're going to be eating at the will that the government decides to dispense you food. Decides to dispense you medical care, decides to give you a job. It's all over. I mean, really, it is. It's all over. It's not going to be fixed by supporting a few candidates, you know, in your state legislature or on the federal level. You've got to do it on a wider scale, and you've got to take back your power in owning your government. That's the only way you can do it. And you've got to reach outside the bubble.
For several years now, and I know you've heard me say this, and anybody who knows me has heard me say this. I've said it at times when I've had the opportunity and privilege of speaking, that the best that our best chance of turning our country around is to start from the bottom up. And that is a good strategy, but I think that the place that we're at with our country now is something that I have to admit and really put out there is, that's not enough. We have to be willing to go from the top down, bottom up. In fact, use their little strategy. I forget the name of that radical that came up with that, top down, bottom up, scrunchus in the middle. But that's what we need to do, and we have to be willing to get involved. And, you know, I want to challenge people out there. I want to ask, you know, what are you willing to do? And I'm going to give you some ideas. Are you willing to educate yourself and share what you learn with others? Reach out to your family and friends as many times as it takes to wake them up. They're not going to wake up the first time. Get over it. Deal with that. Make phone calls to people who have been elected and demand that they do the right thing. Support with your voice and your pocketbook those who do the right thing, and punish those who don't the same way. And hold accountable. You know, we have a lot of people who have been elected, Lisa, that do the right thing some of the time, but they don't do the right thing all of the time. But we have a tendency to just give them a pass. Well, but look, they did this, and this. No, our job as citizens is not to kiss the butt of a politician. It is to hold them accountable. And when they do something right, fine, kudos to you. I'm willing to tell them, hey, thank you, that was a great job. But when they do something wrong, I'm going to come after them as vehemently as I would a Barack Obama for doing the wrong thing. That is our responsibility as citizens. You don't mollycoddle politicians. They don't deserve it. That's not what they're there for, and that's not what we don't owe them anything. They
Amen,
owe us.
Amen, sister. You know, and we've had that conversation a million times before too. And that's the thing. I know that we do it here in Missouri. And I know we do it on a national level too, because we treat people. I think the founders better than anybody else, better than even more than they understood government. Because we know that they studied government history since the beginning of time, and they based our model of government on what they learned throughout the ages. More than they knew that, they knew human sociology. They based our model of government on what they thought human sociology could sustain. And we treat people, human sociology, we like to worship. You know, we worship God, and we all too often worship people that we put into leadership. And what that does is it gives us a free pass on having to be responsible for taking care of our own business.
Right.
And that's the thing. If you want to maintain your liberty and you want to maintain your freedom, it is not neat and clean. Sometimes it is messy. Sometimes it is hard and uncomfortable. And you have to be willing to be able to step outside your comfort zone to maintain what is right and true and free. And that we are soft as a nation. We've gone soft.
And
that's,
for too
I think,
long, and for too long, good people and heads of, there have been some great organizations that have tried to do right things to turn this country around. I've been watching this for over 30 years now, an effort, and I've seen good people in good groups, good organizations working hard to turn it around. But the one thing that they have failed to do is they have fallen into the same trap, the trap that our politicians fall into that cesspool of political mumbo-jumbo, and they have been intimidated, allowed themselves to be intimidated into believing, and you know, you and I have been told by politicians if we did toe the mark the right way that we would lose access, meaning that the politicians would not listen to us or have anything to do with us. We've both been told that. We've both been threatened with that.
The reason they can get away with that,
Lisa, is because too many people have allowed that to be the status quo in dealing with politicians. And it is time for people to take the gloves off and stop putting up with that.
Yep, it is.
And I don't want to hear some politician whining to me about how hard they worked to get elected and how hard it was to raise the money. You ran for that office. You wanted it. You got it. Now you need to do the right thing with it.
Yeah,
and
you know what?
No,
they don't deserve
that
much
forever.
Respect.
In fact, I hope you won't be.
Yeah, people get elected to that office, and somehow, in their mind and in the minds of so many people that put them there, they deserve more respect than the people that put them there. And I never subscribed to that philosophy. You don't just, you know, we respect everybody equally, but you don't deserve any more respect than the people that put you there in that office. And I think the biggest point that I would like to drive home here is that freedom isn't free. It's messy. And we're going to have to start taking a good, you know, while we're critical of all of the things, all of the corruption from the people that are in office that are flushing our government down the toilet, it's really, we have to take a good, long, hard look at how we're allowing that to happen. Because while they're doing the wrong thing, we're not stopping them. You know, we're spending too much time, like you said, throwing them a bone because they do one good thing. We're forgiving them for all their other sins. Well, you can't. And this baloney about getting along with us 80% of the time is better than, you know, the 80-20 with the Ronald Reagan 80-20 rule. That's a load of baloney. You know, we have constitutions on a state level and on a federal level. It's a rule book. It's a guidebook. It's an owner's manual. You know, it's just not that hard to follow.
Right.
So
an economic principle is that if 20% of the effort, meaning that 20% that they don't go with us, can turn everything around and bring about the wrong outcome.
Yeah, if you get a whopping 20% bad bill that, you know, is an Obamacare, you know, I don't know why you're putting those people back in office. You know, you should be marching to the polls with pitchforks and torches. I kind of want to segue in. We're gonna take a quick break here. We have a guest tonight who's gonna kind of illustrate that point to us better than anybody that I think ever could. We've got Mark Baker. He's a Michigan farmer. He has been attacked by his state government, and I'm going to let him tell his story, but it's one that's very quickly becoming known across the country. He's a pig farmer, and his state levied $750,000 worth of fines on him because they're trying to run him out of business. They don't want him to raise pigs in his farm. This man has stood up to the abuse of the federal government and the state government better than just about anybody that I can remember standing up. It's kind of like the Dollar Height story, only I think he's got it with a little bit more punch. So we're going to take a quick break here and come back with Mark Baker and hear about how he's doing the uncomfortable thing, stepping out of his comfort zone to fight not only for his liberties, but for the liberties of the rest of the people across the country.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
On September 15, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia took up debate on whether or not to allow amendments to the new Constitution, and, if so, what method of amendment should be adopted. Initially, it was proposed that only the legislature could make an amendment. Quoting from James Madison's notes of that very day, Colonel Mason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the nose to depend in the first immediately, in the second ultimately, on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. Unquote. There followed a strenuous debate and many propositions, motions, votes, and refinements that arrived at the article as it exists today, giving states and the people the power to meet to amend the Constitution with no regard for the legislature or executive. The time that Mason foresaw, the time of oppressive national government, has arrived. Join us on Monday night in the Hour of Truth as we explore this method of peaceful revolution. We'll discuss how, when, and why. And we will be glad to hear your opinions on exactly what we need to do to fix the issues we face today, using Article 5 of the Constitution. Can we? Will we take our government by the horns, wrestle it to the ground, and return our republic to a government that serves the states and the people? Let's talk about it. Mondays, 7 p.m., the Hour of Truth. Call and participate on the studio line 347-677-1835.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And we first talked to our next guest sometime last year. We were first introduced to Mark Baker and the situation on his farm in Michigan and the issue with his pig farming operation, because it very closely paralleled to an issue that we had here in Missouri not too long ago with the Dollar Heights and their rabbit farming. I think this situation is that situation on steroids. Can't even begin to tell you how scary this must be for him and his family, and the bravery that he has faced this with, because he's absolutely fearless. He's absolutely not backing down. It's an incredible story, and I'm just going to step aside here and let him tell it. Thanks for being with me again tonight, Mark. I'm really glad to have you with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Lisa.
Okay, it's been a while since you've been on the show. Let's kind of start from the very beginning. Why don't you kind of give me a history for the people that have not heard this story before about how this whole situation got started? First of all, you're ex-military, is that right?
That's correct. I retired from the Air Force in 2004, May.
And you bought a small farm in Michigan.
That's right. My wife is from this part of Michigan, and we used to come back here on my leaves, and I liked it here, and I thought it'd be a good place to raise my children. So we found a farm here, 80-acre farm, and we purchased it before I got off active duty, and then when I finally retired, we settled here and started a farming operation.
And what was the extent of your farming operation? I mean, we're talking about pigs here tonight, but what else did you do?
We still do other things. We raise what they call pastured poultry, and we milk a few cows, not too many right now. We have five. We do some grass-fed beef, so we rotationally graze beef cows around on our property, and then we raise a few field crops just to keep things going. But we do something a little different, as we have a butcher shop right on the farm. So,
but
most
that's
of
new.
The,
that's not something you always had. That's a recent addition to your farm, is that right?
No, we've had the butcher shop for, let's see, we've been here almost 10 years. We've had it for a good 8 years at least.
Oh, okay.
One of the first things we put in. Because we had a little bit of butchering experience before I got off active duty. And, you know, it just seemed like something that not too many other people were doing. So that's where we started, really.
Okay.
So the whole thing started for me, I guess, in 2006. I started raising a pig called the Mangalitsa pig. They're native to Hungary, mostly. We got some out of Austria, and we learned about the pig and why people want the pig and what's so great about the pig and all that stuff. And we also had to learn how to raise it, feed it, house it, times, dates, how to take the pig apart, and what to do with it once you finally get it apart. So we invested some time in it and worked at it pretty hard to get it to the point where this all started in 2012. My wife and I were delivering to one of our restaurants, and the chef there said, "Hey, I heard your pigs are going to be outlawed." And I thought he was kidding me. What, you know, these are pretty high-end pigs, and why would they be outlawed? But he says, "Yeah, the state of Michigan is classifying your pigs as feral, and they're illegal to own." So I thought I'd check in with it. I called our ag commissioner on my cell phone. I mean, pretty quick I called him. And he said, "Yeah, it's sad but true, but that's what the Department of Natural Resources is doing." And so the next day I called my senator's office, Senator Darwin Bohr, and inquired if they knew anything about it, and they knew all about it. It was quite a stir up to that point. But, I'm on the farm. I didn't know about it. And they said that the Department of Natural Resources was going to have a meeting in Grayling, Michigan in February, and that I should go to that to get my answers to the questions that I had. So I figured I'd go, but I thought it couldn't apply to me because I downloaded the what they call the declaratory ruling, which I encourage people to go to michigandnr.org and look around there for the declaratory ruling. You can look under feral swine or feral pigs, and you'll find it. And kind of go through it, and that's what I did. And when I went through it, I thought, "Oh, no way! There's no way that this is going to work," because they listed 9 characteristics in there. And when I read through the characteristics, they classified every single pig known to man ever. So I really thought there had to be a mistake. So I just bided my time, and I kept doing business. Then I went to that briefing that the DNR put on. DNR is the acronym for Department of Natural Resources. And when I went there, it was I felt like I was back in the military, because I walked in and they had it set up kind of like a military briefing, where the farmers were kind of brought in single file. You had to walk past armed conservation officers, and then they had, you know, some cute girls that were helping us fill out paperwork and stuff. It was a total psyops. And then we were told, sit down, and then they gave us this briefing. It's about 50 guys in the room, and some of them, we're in a big state, you know, so some guys drove 8 hours to get there. I drove two myself. And they basically just went over the declaratory ruling and said, have a nice drive home, fellas. And some of the men started to move around a little bit, wanted to ask some questions, and an officer sitting right behind me stood up, gestured to his weapon. He put his hand right above it. Didn't touch it, but put his hand above it. I saw him do it. And he said, no, we're going to keep this organized, gentlemen. And when I saw that, I said, wow, I guess I haven't been, I might be in the wrong country here. But right then, we said, all right, we want to ask some questions. And they would not take any of our questions. They said, we didn't build a question and answer session into this, and you guys will just have to go on home. Have a donut, go on home. And
so
it got kind of ugly from there, but they would not answer our questions.
So the pigs that you're raising, Mengelisa pigs, what is so outrageous about these pigs? And the other farmers that were with you, were these specifically, were they also raising the same kind of pigs that you were, or did they have other kinds of pigs as well? Why are they targeting this?
They had completely other types of pigs than I had.
So it's all
some
pig
of
farmers,
them,
pretty much.
Well, anybody who got the declaratory ruling, anybody who was briefed on the declaratory ruling and downloaded it from the Internet and looked at it, let's say that you raised, say, Duroc pigs or Hampshire pigs or something like that, and you read the declaratory ruling, you'd say, oh, my, this pertains to me. I better get a handle on this. I better find out if what I'm supposed to do. Because they ordered us to depopulate our animals by April 1st of 2012. So it wasn't like, you know, it was a big deal, especially for me. I had a lot of these animals, and that would have been a huge loss for me financially to just kill off my pigs. Depopulate means they want you to either kill them, push them in a hole, or...
you can't sell them.
Send them to slaughter, but you had to do it before the 12th, or the first day of April 2012. So that was the end of that briefing. And I went home, talked with my wife about it. I did talk with several of the men at this briefing, other farmers, and a lot of guys were fired up. And I thought everybody was going to file suit. I really did. I didn't think I'd be the only one. But I went home, talked with my wife. We had some savings that we were going to fix up this farmhouse with. And we decided that we would retain a lawyer, and then it would get taken care of very quickly. We thought we could be to court by May of that year. But it didn't go that way. The state does everything that they can to prolong and put off this thing, because their strategy is that there's no way that some farmer is going to come up with enough money to pay a lawyer to go as long as they think that they're going to go. So this started in, 2011? Here it is, 2014. So we've been at it for a while now. And
how much do you estimate you spent on legal costs in this time as a small farmer?
I've spent everything that I have. I mean, I'm betting the farm on this whole thing that we can win this, but quite a few other people have come alongside of us from across the country. I mean, in $5 increments up to, $1,000 increments and everywhere in between. But we're approaching $250,000 right now.
So basically the strategy is that they can just they can just wait you out. They can just spend you until you run out of money and you'll cave, and they'll win.
Yeah, that's their strategy, but I think they've realized that it's not working because we've been to the point where we had to sell everything that we have. And then we thought it was the end, and it was almost kind of a relief that it was just going to end. They'd run us out of money, and we were just going to have to quit. But then somebody would step up and say, here you go, here's $28,000 to keep it going, or something like that. And that's the way it's gone. Right now we're at another point like that, like where we just sold our last two cows yesterday just to keep things going. We're supposed to get the trial by March 11th. That's what's supposed to happen. But we've been here before where we've had a court date, a trial date. And I'm very confident, and I think your listeners would be too, if they download the declaratory ruling and go through it and see how nebulous it is. They
so
are threatening
me
with a federal – oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. What are they threatening with?
Well, they're threatening me with a federal a felony offense, a federal pinch. Oh. What they say is that they have added feral pigs to the invasive species order. And the invasive species order is good law, but they've added a farm animal to it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, they're saying that the pigs that are on my side of the fence, the ones on my farm that were born here and raised here, they're saying that those pigs are feral because of the way that they look. And then they give a list of characteristics, and they're crazy. I mean, they're saying any pig with a straight tail is feral. Any pig with a curly tail is feral. Any pig with an erect ear, feral. Any pig with a floppy ear, feral. Any black pig, any, black and white pig, any brown pig, any red pig. And it goes on and on. And when you get down to the ninth characteristic, it is, I'm reading it here, it says, other characteristics not currently known to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources that are identified by the scientific community.
So yeah, all of these characteristics and then anything we want to make up after that.
That's right. That's right. So.
Okay, so. Yeah, brings me to my next question. What is the point of this? Why would the federal government or the Michigan state government want to run pig farmers out of business?
Well, all I know is who is supporting them in this thing. Now, one of their biggest supporters, it appears to be, is Michigan Pork Producers. And Michigan Pork Producers is a lobbying outfit that lobbies on behalf of the confinement operations, you know, those great big stinky hog houses where you hear about all the death and destruction and disease coming out of them. They've got a lot of them here in Michigan. And, without them, there'd be no place for our illegal aliens to work. So they're real important to the state of Michigan. And So those guys are definitely on board with it. Whether they're the primary mover, I kind of doubt it. There's another outfit in Michigan called the ALM, Ag Leaders Michigan, and that's comprised of Greenstone Farm Credit Services. They're the ones that dole out the Bureau of Land Management funds that are supposed to be doled out evenly and equitably to all farmers, but they only loan money to confinement operations. Then there's soybean producers. There's Michigan Milk Producers, MMP, Michigan Poultry Producers, Michigan Potato Producers, Michigan Corn, and then Michigan Agribusiness. And I may have left one out, but you get the picture. It's all the industrial agriculture outfits.
Right, they're trying to run the little guy out of business, the little family farm.
Kind of looking that way. And the reason for that is the way agribusiness is configured is like a business, like the auto industry. They have to expand every year because their business is not based on equity. Their business is based on the amount of debt that they incur. You know, and I don't understand everything there is to know about that, but I do know that they want more and more land to, you know, plant corn on and then put their manure on from the confinement operations. So they need all the family farmers off so that they can get this land and put it into production for their purposes.
Wow.
And, you know, their purposes, of course, you know, they're growing genetically modified corn, and they use the real heavy metal, you know, equipment to till the fields. If the fields are a little bit wet, they go in and they take all the water off the fields. They tile the fields and run the water off. So, you know, you have a lot of runoff going into the rivers and streams. One of the things that's so bizarre about this whole feral swine initiative is the state of Michigan is saying, the DNR is saying publicly, that we have a tremendous problem with feral swine in the state of Michigan. I think people see Elvis Presley more than they do feral swine, because I don't know anybody that's seen one, right? But they say that feral swine damage the environment, they molest wildlife, that they damage farm equipment, is what they say. I don't know why they say that, but they do. They say they feral swine damage farm equipment. That's one of their claims. But in reality, factory farming does far more damage to the environment than the type of farming that we do. Far more. And, you know, there's all kinds of examples of that, you know, from genetically modified organisms to the destruction of wetlands and everything in between. I mean, the disease issues associated with factory farming are new diseases. They're diseases we haven't seen in this country in the last 5 years. We've got some very new things right now that, you know, and then they treat it with antibiotics. I wonder if your listeners realize that 80% of the antibiotics that are used in the United States go directly into animal feeds. So factory farms feed the animals antibiotics to keep them from getting sick. And, of course, you know, everything's run by insurance companies and lawyers and all that stuff. So the guys that run them are not really farmers. They are just adhering to a checklist of how somebody said it should be done, with no concern for the environment or the life of these animals that they're raising for food for us. I mean, I think everybody's seen the horrible pictures that have been brought out lately of confinement operations for hogs and chickens. It's horrendous that human beings can do that, but they do.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark. Okay, so when all of you small farmers went to this meeting across your state, how many people are left? Have they run other businesses out of business? Have they run other farmers off out of business now? Are you the only person, you know, standing after the battle, or what's going on there? How are they having success with this?
No, here's what happened. They put out the order that we had to have our animals depopulated by April 1st. And I came out publicly and said, I will not comply. I will not do it. And then they made some threats, you know, that you don't want to be arrested in front of your children, and, you know, we'll be there with so many guys, it'll make your head spin, and all this stuff, you know. I was a bit concerned about that. I sent my wife and children away for the first night. They weren't here. I was here by myself. But it's just threats, and this is what they do. They make threats, and most times farmers or just regular people, they don't want to be the one that takes the first bullet, you know?
Well, sure.
And so when that happened, when I did not stand down from them, then they realized, oh, we have a problem. You know, they kind of wanted the whole house of cards to just collapse under the force of the fear that they tried to instill in the public. But when one guy stood, then another guy stood, and then another and another. And right now there's five or six of us that have said, we're not doing it. We're just not doing it. You don't hear about the other guys just because I am the one that do the radio interviews and the TV interviews and stuff like that, because I was in the military, so I'm used to public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are not. So you don't hear about them, but they're just as courageous.
And are they also being pursued? Are they dealing with the same kind of legal issues that you're dealing with, or have they been able to slaughter their pigs? Are they,
Actually, each one of our cases is being handled completely different. It's kind of bizarre, but we know what they're doing. They have an unlimited supply of lawyers, right? They have an unlimited supply of money. So they assign, like to my case, they have three lawyers assigned to my case. And all they do is they're listening to this right now, or they'll hear it tomorrow morning. They scan everything that we do. That we're surveilled. We feel like we're being surveilled 24/7.
Yeah,
you
told me
some. Not sure anymore, but we have been in the past. We've definitely been surveilled. And they're looking for a weak spot. They use three methods that we know of. They'll put people in the woods. You know, we're surrounded by woods. And we know that because one time we left here for a birthday party, we were gone 2 hours, we came back, and all of our gates were opened up and all of our animals were pushed out. So we know that somebody was watching. And as soon as we left, they came and did this. And that was an effort to show that we don't have control of our pigs. It didn't work out very well because at night, pigs don't really want to go anyplace. They don't see very good. And they don't want to be too far from their beds. So that didn't work out. The other way that they have surveilled us is with airplanes. That's during the day. The DNR does that routinely. Since I started talking about it, they quit doing it.
Kind of like drugs.
And then the third way is they use a drone platform. I don't want people. I've said drones before, and I think people are thinking predators. But they have these square platforms that they just come in at very low altitude, and then they hover around, and apparently they're taking pictures. The first time that we saw it, it was myself and my oldest daughter, and. I've been out of the military a long time, and I thought the only kind of drones they had were predators, but I'd never seen anything like this. And we thought that we were looking at an unidentified flying, which it was a UFO, but we thought we were looking at Martians, you know. And we came to the house. It's like 10:30, we were out shut. Yeah.
During the day?
No, this was seen at night is when it happened. We were down shutting water off. You know, we have to do that every night. And, for the drinkers, for the different pens and stuff where we keep the pigs, we shut it off just in case one of the pigs pulls it off during the night. We don't want to flood anything. And we saw this thing coming in real low. And it had a blinking red light on it. And I thought it was a helicopter, but it didn't make any noise at all. And then I could just barely see the outline of it. And it was about the size of a small table, you know. It was square, and it appeared to have like four or six rotors on it, and it had a blinking red light on top, and it made no noise at all, and it just hovered right over our pig pen, and it kind of looked at us, it seemed like, and then it just left at a high rate of speed. It was pretty strange.
That is frightening.
Yeah.
They're lucky you didn't shoot it.
Well, I didn't have a gun. If I'd had a gun, I would have shot it for sure. But I think that when they realized that I knew what it was, I think that they know if they do it again, I could take it down, you know, and then I'd know that they're doing it. I know they're doing it anyway. You know, they're not
right.
That good. They're really not that good at what they do. We found places where they've been
or
in
they
the woods.
Or they just don't care.
They leave cigarette butts and coffee cups there while they're scoping us. No, they don't do it in the wintertime because I patrol all the time because I'm looking for them. If I can catch them, they're not going home. I'm not, I won't hurt them, but I'll cuff them to a tree for sure. but I haven't caught him. And I really don't want any confrontation. I really want to just get to court.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what you're offering the public, Mark. Okay, so you've got these pigs, Mengelisa pigs, good pigs for raising, you know, for food. You're obviously not the only farmer in the country who's raising these pigs. It's happening all over the place. So tell me, what is it that you guys are able to offer the folks here in relationship? Because we all understand, well, those of us that are paying attention, and Cindy, my sidekick here, is a really good person to talk to about this because we understand about prepping and good food storage and eating the right kinds of foods and the kinds of foods that you're raising on your farm versus the kind of food that the big farms are giving us nowadays. Tell us about the kind of things that you guys are doing for folks.
All right, well, our farm's called Baker's Green Acres. If people want to follow up on it, they can look at our BakersGreenAcres.com, and they can see what we do, pictures of everything. But basically where we've landed is we're a pastured outfit, so we don't use any growth hormones. We don't use any antibiotics in our feeds. No medications at all unless I have an animal that gets a cut or something like that, and then I will use medications, but the same as I would treat my children. You know, we don't, you know, the meats that leave here are clean. I don't use any glyphosates on my fields, kill weeds or anything like that. We just use hoes. You know, we kind of do things the old-fashioned way. But it produces a food that's clean and that you know you can eat. So we wind up seeing a lot of people that have gone the pharmaceutical route. They're sick. They can't figure out what's wrong with them. But what happens is their bodies get so weakened from eating industrial food that they can't take in any nutrients from the food, and the food is seriously lacking in nutrients anyway. And they wind up having to come to us because the food's clean and their bodies can take it in and they can get healthy from it. So that's why we got into milk, because of a lot of these customers that we have needed milk, and they need milk that's clean. It has to be the cows have to be fed grass. So that's one of the things that we're providing to the public. We also do educational programs because we feel that to take back a lot of our sovereignty, we have to have our own food supply. We have to be able to take care of ourselves. If the grocery store shuts down and we can't get any food, we're going to be hungry and destitute in 2 weeks. And that's not where you want to be. And then somebody can hold that over you. But I really think, Lisa, the bigger issue here is the Department of Natural Resources is nothing more or nothing less than a regulatory agency, a lot like the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Love, the Department of, you know, all those
energy,
departments that they have.
Education, all of it.
Right. And in this case, the Department of Natural Resources has said any pig with a straight tail or a curly tail is illegal. And when they're asked why, they say, because we friggin' say so. And they slam their fist down on the table and they look you in the eye. And that's who they are. That's who they are. So they have to be met with an in-kind resistance, right? And there are many of us in this country that have fought for our country on a battlefield, you know, with real guns, not like these punks that dress up in these DNR outfits. They're just civilians. That's all they are, in uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gone too far with this, because if your listeners will think about this for a minute, a regulatory agency does not have the authority to make law. You know, they can put forth suggestion to the legislators, like they may have a better in-depth on-the-ground knowledge of a certain invasive species, right? So they should put that information towards a legislator and say, you know what, we need a bill we need a law to limit this. And then the legislators have to come together as representatives of the people and say, does this make sense? Is this good for everybody? And will it work?
That's the way it's supposed to work.
Let's do it. But when you have the Department of Natural Resources that's being pushed and cajoled by the pork producers, man, before you know it, they're going to say that your dachshund is illegal. Because after all, you know, dachshunds can become feral and they can bite children, so they should become feral. Regulatory agencies do not have the authority to make law and then enforce it. But if they get away with it, in this case, right here, our farm, Michigan, if they get away with this, there's no stopping them. They can decide that anything is illegal, you know, with their reasoning of, well, it's bad for the environment, it's bad for children, it's bad for the deer. Oh, my goodness, it's bad for the deer. We've got to kill off all the feral pigs. And there's no stopping them then. Then they can say, and they've already done this. In Michigan, they, a few years back, right before deer hunting season, they said, oh, we can't bait deer this year. I don't know why people get off on shooting deer so much, but they'll put bait out in the fields, and when the deer come out, they shoot them. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's right, but it's not illegal. But the DNR decided, oh, we can't do this year because the deer could touch noses with cows, and they could get bovine tuberculosis, and it would kill off the deer population. And the public was stupid enough to buy it, but they didn't have a choice, really. And then that year, all the people that produce feed for deer, which in Michigan I would reckon is a fairly lucrative business. There's a lot of dollars that change hands on that. They were out of business. So people lost their farms because the DNR friggin' said so. And they got away with it. They got away with it.
So let's be clear, okay, let's draw some distinctions just in case it's not clear for people. So you're a small farmer. You're not raising feral pigs. Your pigs are penned up, but they're not confined pigs like the mass-produced large pig producers are that keep their pigs in little cages. You keep your pigs in pens, fenced in on your farm.
Correct. Pens. We have fields. We have pretty good-sized fields that we rotate them around on. Yep.
Right. Yeah, my dad.
Pastures.
Yeah, fenced-in pastures. My dad has a farm in northern Missouri. Pig farmers there too, and they're not wild pigs. They're enclosed in fences, and they run on a field, and they live. You know, you feed them, and they root in the ground, but they're not wild, and they're not
right.
You know, not getting out into the woods, and they're not tearing up the truffles, and they're not, you know, they're not messing around with the deer. But then they're not in cage, but they're not like the big pork producing farmers who have their pigs in, they spend their lives in a pen.
Right. You don't do that.
Okay. So and my next question to you is with your, so they're obviously targeting pig farmers in Michigan. What about the cattle farmers? What's next?
Well,
how are those folks
doing? Next. I don't know what's next on their list. I really don't know. I think they had to get this one under their belt first, and I think they went off the pig people because the chances of there being any kind of networking amongst pig farmers was slim. We don't have that many pig producers in Michigan that are
so hit the low hanging fruit. Get the small pig farmers first.
Yeah. Knock off the easy ones first. You know, it's just like the way wolves hunt. You know, they'll take the smallest and the easiest, the weakest. You know, pig farmers don't make a whole lot of money, so it's not like they're sitting on $750,000 that they can just hire lawyers and fight the state. Most of them, they're making it, but they're not doing real great. The reason we farm is not to make big agricultural bucks. We do it because it's a good way for us to raise our children.
Sure.
We could have done a lot of other things, but we chose this.
Mm-hmm.
So the state was definitely going after the weakest, and if they could get it done, then they would probably go after the next one. And know, they've already said that that cattle can transfer diseases to deer if they touch noses through the fence, and that is so ridiculous because
How many deer do you know that are gonna? Yeah, it's not gonna last.
It'd never happen. Never happen. Deer hate cows. They
right.
hate them. They're afraid of them, so they won't come near them.
Amazing. Just totally, totally amazing to me.
This is Cindy. Do you think that part of the motivation here might be, in listening to you, and I know of other in other states of other farmers that have faced and are facing what you're facing. It seems to me that this is really coming down to the powers that be through regulatory measures trying to control our food supply. And maybe that's a bit more radical than you want to go with it, and I would understand that. But I really think that that's true. And, you know, you said something very significant. If we have local farmers growing good crops, producing well-fed, healthy animals without antibiotics and so forth, then locally we're going to be able to buy and eat in a far more healthy manner than we do through Big Ag. And but I think that Big Ag, they have the money and they have the power and they have the politicians in their back pockets because they support campaigns. And so I think that, and I do think that they're going after small guys like you because it's easy to set an example, and then fear ripples through, and people just give up and they don't fight. Do you think there's anything to what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure. First of all, you know, if you can control the food, you control the people.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact that when we go into somebody else's country to free their people, or you know, like we do a lot, we go after their seeds. We go after their seed supply. That's one of the first things we do, and blow it up. And then, of course, when we rebuild their country, there's Monsanto. You know, they can supply them with seed, and they'll do it at a cheap price. Sometimes they'll even do it for nothing, just because once you use Monsanto seed, you have to keep using it.
Yeah,
so there's truth to that. I think there's a control issue. That's definitely part of it. And I don't think that's too radical. Just look at Joseph Stalin, what he did. He
mm-hmm.
starved. And it's nothing new. What's going on here is nothing new.
It's hard to believe that we're having this conversation in this country right now, but... But we are, and it those are the facts, and it's sad, but it is true, and you're right. We've seen it. History tells us history gives us a good barometer for what this could mean, and people do need
right.
to pay attention, and they need to support farmers like you. What can we do? Is there anything that we can do to help you?
For sure. Through this whole thing, we've learned how to do this. We've learned who our adversary is, which is really important. Okay, the DNR told me, be popular, kill all your animals. You go out there with a gun and you shoot all these animals in the head, or we're going to come and arrest you. And you know what I told them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And did they come? No, they didn't. They said, depopulate your animals or we're going to give you a fine. And I told them, well, you know what I told them. I actually told them nuts. I wrote him a letter and I said, nuts, I won't do it. And they fined me. What do they do? They fined me for 70 animals. They fined me $700,000, right? And to that, I just thumb my nose at it. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to start paying you right away. What are you going to do, take my birthday away? So they're making these threats. And if you do not show fear, then they have no weapon against you. Because they don't have the authority to come in here and cuff me and stuff me and then go out and shoot my pigs. They don't have that authority. We still have the Constitution. You have to remember that. We're at kind of a, you know, society ebbs and flows. You know, it's up and down, up and down. Like right now, there's a lot of people that are in power that in 10 years from now will not be in power if they're even still alive. You know, there are people, there are industries that are doing real well right now that won't be in 5 years. They were industries 5 years ago, let's say, like, or 10 years, the auto industry. Been to Detroit lately? It's not doing so good. So things come and go, but what you don't want to do, here's the message, what you don't want to do is just say, oh, there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. There is something you can do. You can dig your heels in, and you can look them in the eye and say no. But it's always a risk. But see, that's the thing about our society that is leading us down the path of destruction, is no one will take a risk anymore because of selfishness. They just want what they want. And so
and
long as
hard.
They have EV and their six-pack, good to go. Now, you
right.
got to take a risk. You think back to the April 17th, 1774, that shot that was heard around the world. I'm hopeful in thinking that it was a colonist that fired that shot. I really hope it was. So some man, some brave man said, this has got to end, and it's got to end right here. And he touched off around, and that started the Revolutionary War. And I'm not saying that we have to go to that, but it's on the table. You know, we have the Second Amendment. Why is the Second Amendment there? If they push too hard, we go to the ballot box. But eventually, if you push too hard, we'll go to the cartridge box. That's just the way it is. And they'll take something like that, and they'll start calling you a gun-waving lunatic because you say something like that. Well, I guess that would mean that the framers of my country were gun-waving lunatics too. And it's always funny that the people that make that claim are the ones that brandish guns the most. You know, every time we've been to court with the Department of Natural Resources, you know, they're supposed to be like Ranger Rick and, Mr. Ranger. They come with lots of guns and lots of bulletproof vests. Now, why is that? Aren't they supposed to be checking fishing licenses? But they've turned it to some paramilitary organization for whatever reason. But it doesn't need to stay like that. We need, see, the people own this country, and we need to be hounding, become dedicated at taking back your freedom. And that means calling your state capitol, calling your senator, and hounding them and really getting involved. And not just one phone call and call it good. It needs to be a continual, you know, what are you doing about this? Calling the attorney, like in my case, the attorney general's office, that's an elected position. And you call down there and say, you know what? I'm doing everything I can to make sure you don't hold that office this next election. I'm doing everything I can. And they respond to that because my attorney general's, he's a dirtbag. All he really wants is the office. He just wants the office. And he really needs to be voted out because we need somebody that is a strict constitutionalist and that will – you know, that will make decisions based on the Constitution. I mean, after all, the Attorney General is the one that leveled the $700,000 fine against my farm and me. And the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, I guess he didn't read that, but the Eighth Amendment clearly states that American citizens are free from excessive fines and cruel and unusual punishment. I think $700,000, you know, to a family farmer, retired GI, I think that's a little bit excessive.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. But and then here's another avenue that people can take. I mean, if you want to resist, you want to get involved, you can. You just have to be a little resourceful. And once you start to understand the Constitution, maybe not the whole Constitution, but let's just take the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution that was put in so you could understand it. The average person could understand what their rights are. Can you walk into a theater and say, there's a fire in here? You can. You have freedom of speech. Should you? No, you shouldn't. But you have the freedom of speech. I'm on your radio program. I just called the Attorney General. I forget what I called him, but he's a dirtbag, yeah. Now, if I was in Germany in 1936 and did that, they would be here tonight. They would put me up against the wall and shoot me. But we have the Constitution. They can't do that. I have the freedom of speech. And I also have the Second Amendment, so they have to get past that too. And you know, a lot of other amendments. So I think what people need to do, they need to get that Bill of Rights and know that Bill of Rights and know the chain of command of our government. Like, in our case, I live in a county. My county elects a man to the sheriff's position. He's like the mm-hmm. shepherd of the people. He's supposed to run defense for me. You know, they've been relegated to the point where they do speed traps and harassment. But what he's really supposed to do is run defense for me. So here we have the attorney general that has fined me $700,000, clear violation of the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. My sheriff should alert him that, but you can't do that. That's against the law, and I'll have to arrest you if you don't pull that
and,
back.
And the sheriff has the authority to do that. The sheriff
Absolutely.
Is the highest law officer in the United States of America. Office is, and it's an elected office as well. But the sheriff, and most people do not understand that, and most sheriffs don't know this about their position, unfortunately.
Right.
So how is
right.
that working
right.
for you, Mark?
He should be running interference, and he should put a stop to it.
Yes, and how is that working for you? How? What's your relationship with your sheriff?
Bad, really bad. my wife to him, when we first downloaded the declaratory ruling, he's a family friend, not my family, you know, my wife's family. She's from here. So we went to him. I made an appointment, went to his office, showed him the declaratory ruling. He wouldn't take it from my hand, as I remember, but he knew all about it. But he said, well, that's between you and the DNR, you know, and you're pretty much on your own. And so he has been very, very useless throughout
this
whole thing.
Yeah. You've got spineless
sheriff. Yeah. He does if it's his own agenda. I mean, if he's working on his house or his airplane or whatever, then he's got
his airplane.
He's got some spine. Yeah, he bought my wife's grandfather's airplane.
Your sheriff can afford an airplane?
On $54,000 a year. Sure can.
Oh, there's some interesting, there's a story there.
Yeah, there sure is. There sure is. But the story gets better. Let me tell you what happened last Thursday. This is great, and I want people to know about this. I can explain how this fits in if you give me a minute. Last Thursday, I got an email from a friend of mine that I used to do business with before the DNR ruined my business. He's an accountant with a distribution company. They used to buy my stuff. Visited by the USDA. It was a follow-up inspection on some meat that they had there that was incorrectly marked or whatever. And so this guy with the USDA was kind of high up there in the chain. And when they were talking with him, they wanted to know what his take was on the feral swine issue as it pertains to, you know, Baker's Green Acres, because it's kind of a hot topic around here. And the guy came unglued. And he said that no one from the USDA or the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development was allowed to come anywhere near me or my farm until further notice, and that the only people that were allowed to come here are DNR agents that are armed, right?
Really?
And then, yeah, and then he said, this guy is a gun-waving lunatic, right? And so my friend's coworker is a friend of our family, and she said, well, why do you say that? And you don't know him. Why do you say that? And the guy said, well, that's what came down from the top. So here's a guy that's working for the USDA that got the word from his chain of command that I am a gun-waving lunatic. It's kind of funny, but really it isn't, because when you think back on all of the U.S. citizens that have been murdered by our government, they marginalize them first, and they put them in a place where, you know, when they get killed, you're just like, who cares? You know, like Randy Weaver. He was a white separatist. Remember, he was a white separatist? Mm-hmm. So he's a white guy, for goodness sakes. Kill a white, who cares? You kill a white guy, who cares, you know?
Right.
And he was a separatist. And then you think of the Waco people. oh, well, you know, they, you know, the guy had more than one wife. I guess David Koresh had more than one wife. So it was okay that they, you know, they gunned the building and burned it down. That's another thing, too. They called it a compound. I've been a Christian all my life, and I've been to lots of church camps. That was a church camp. That was not a compound. I spent most of my adult life in the military. I know what a compound looks like. A compound has a big gate around it, and usually it has, you know, a berm. It usually has fire control towers and a means to defend itself. You know, the Branch Davidians at Waco had no way of defending themselves. They were in a wooden building. You know, bullets go right through that.
Right.
So they marginalize them first, and then they, you know, they execute them. So, you know, we just think that they're running out of options, and they might want to try a different option. So they're circulating these stories that we're lunatics.
Right.
So I just thought I'd like to get that out there because
we don't live
on a compound. And,
it's been my personal experience when you're dealing with the bureaucratic government that sunlight is the best disinfectant. So we're very happy to give you a platform here to spread a little sunshine about Baker's Green Acres. And a last question for you. While all of us are paying for the government to prosecute you, what do your attorneys say about this whole situation and how this is working out for you?
Well, I have one attorney, and she's just a small town attorney that believes in what we're doing. You know, she's a kind of a foodie. She's a bit of a tree hugger, and I'm really not a tree hugger. So me and her come from different places, but she believes what we're doing, and I think above all she believes in the system, and she doesn't like to see this happening. There was a time when she would say, if we win. Now, if I say, if we win, she'll say, no, when we win. When we win. You need to be thinking like that.
Okay.
So she's real optimistic, and, you know, the country owes her a debt of gratitude for sure. Want to get involved, I mean, we could always use help financially. I mean, we're way, way, way behind right now, so we could always use help. And there's a button on
BakersGreenAcres.com. Yeah, let's talk about that pledge button there. Let's talk about that donation button.
Yeah, people could go to BakersGreenAcres.com, and there's a pledge button there, and we can use any kind of help that people can give. And I think more... you know, if you can give us some help and spread that around, spread some of the videos around and the information that's out. We have a YouTube site, and I make videos and I update things. I don't type real well, so I just get in front of my iPhone and I make a video, and then I just put it up on YouTube. It's Baker's Green Acres YouTube account. And then... getting involved on the phone. Like, my county is Maseau County, so it's not too hard to find the sheriff's phone number. And rattle his cage. Just say, why aren't you doing your job? Why are you not doing your job? You know, I reported that incident with the USDA last Saturday because I have to do that. And even though I don't think the sheriff's department's going to do squat, I have to establish a paper trail to keep myself safe as possible. And I have not heard back from them. They haven't gotten back to me. You know, they're not going to engage. But rattling the sheriff's department's tree is a good thing to do because there's a possibility they may have to take that office away from him come election time.
Could you spell the name of your county for us?
What's that?
Could you spell the name of your county for us?
Yeah, it's Maseau, M-I-S-S-A-U-K-E-E.
Okay.
The other thing, yeah?
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the other thing is the Attorney General's office is a good one to rattle. The Governor's office and the DNR. Because they have to know that this issue is not going away. Not, and I don't want people to get the idea that we're doing this just for, so we can go back to raising pigs. You know, this applies to anything that you want to do. If you want to raise a garden and the Department of Ag can come in and say, we've outlawed that, so you have to spray it with Roundup. You don't want that. And that's the way it's gone.
Right.
We want to make sure that we maintain our freedoms. And I, at least I heard you say before that our freedoms, they're not free. People got to realize that, you know, a lot of us that served in the military for a long time, you know, we saw our friends die. We know that the price of freedom is not free. But for the civilian population, it isn't either. You have to get involved. You have to make a stand, draw a line in the sand, and you say you are not coming over this line. And when you have bureaucrats in state, federal, and local government, and they tell you to do something, your first answer should be no. And make them work for their money. Make them work. They're bureaucrats. They don't want to put pen to paper any more than anybody does. But they want to go home on Friday and forget about everything. And if you make them work for it, chances are they'll just back right off.
Absolutely. Okay, Mark Baker, Baker's Green Acres. Make sure you go to that website, and that donate button is on the top right-hand corner of the website. In addition to giving a donation for their legal fights there, you can also patronize their services there. You sell all of your products. You pack them and ship them at a great fee, a great rate, and you're getting the best pork and beef. You're selling beef too, I think, right?
Yes.
That you can buy.
Yep.
And I actually, I'd love to have you come back another time, Mark, because we do a lot of talk about prepping and food storage and those kinds of things, and we'd love to have you come back and talk about those things again pretty soon.
Sure.
And publicize that part of your business, because not only can you donate to the legal cause, you can also keep them in business by buying its products. So Baker's Green Acres is where you want to go for that. And when is your next court date? March what?
We have a hearing on the 30th of January, and then after that, our trial is set for the 11th of March, 2014. It's a 3-day trial.
How many times have they postponed your trial?
This will be the – well, if they do it again, it will be the fifth.
Fifth time. Okay. Yeah, it's a very, very fun tactic. And who's your judge, by the way? While we're naming names, who's your judge?
His name is Judge William Fagerman. And, the beauty of the system is he's a neighbor of ours. So he's a circuit judge. So, you know, my kids go to the same library as his grandkids go to. If we shop at the store, I'm sure we see him. I mean, I know where he lives. He actually is a boy that works at my farm that is a neighbor of the judge's. I mean, a very close neighbor. So people know that's the beauty of the system. The judge is sympathetic to me, and not necessarily the industrial food complex. So it's a good system that we have. You know, I can sue the state, and I can sue them right in my county. If they've done something wrong, I'll beat them.
But we also want to know, too, that the judges are in charge of these cases, and while they do have to follow certain protocol, they also do have the ability to get these things to trial. They don't have to let these things drag out if they don't want to.
That's true.
So they do have a certain amount of authority how these things play out.
Yeah. In every case that the state has delayed, they did so with a legitimate reason. It's just the timing of it. We would say to them, well, you know, you could have asked this question 2 months ago, and we could have got you the answer. And then they want to, the last thing is, or the thing that's happening in January, we just found out that it's a hearing, that they are going to challenge our witnesses. And our case is so simple. Our case is based on the information that they've provided us, and we're merely bringing in our family veterinarian And then another vet that's an expert in swine production from a different county, but he's licensed by the state of Michigan. And the state wants to contest them as expert witnesses in swine. So when they do that, the judge sees this, and he looks at him and just shakes his head, like, do you really think you're going to have much standing in my court? You're acting so unprofessionally, like. So I think everything that they do that's stupid kind of works in our favor. I'm real optimistic. I'm really looking forward to getting to court. And oh, that's another thing people ought to probably think about, trying to make it. The courtroom was really jammed last time, but this time it's a 3-day, and we want to try and rotate people in and out so they can see what's going on.
Very good. That's a great strategy.
Yeah.
This, because, again, sunlight is the best disinfectant. I always recommend that for courtrooms. Courtrooms are probably the most cloaked branch. The judiciary is the most cloaked branch of the government. And if people really knew what went on in courtrooms, if you think they're mad about the executive and the legislative branches, you'd really be hopping mad about what you see going on in courtrooms. It's ridiculous. So,
yeah.
Mark Baker, Baker's Green Acres,
yep.
Please keep us informed and updated on what goes on with you over the next couple of weeks. I would encourage everybody to go to the website and drop a little donation there and maybe order a side of bacon.
Yeah,
sounds like
right
it's
on.
Good stuff to have on a Sunday morning breakfast. Thank you, Mark. We really appreciate it, and we hope to talk to you again very soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Lisa.
Thanks. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yep.
So, absolutely amazing stuff. You,
that was amazing.
You know, it just never ends. I'm telling you.
No.
It's always something, and I have
I know.
It is so inspiring to hear him talk mm-hmm. because he's absolutely dead on right. He's fearless because he knows he's right. He's got the Constitution and everything behind him. What he really
right.
needs. Is the support of us out here, the people in his community, to support him in that, because he's fighting not only for himself, of course, but for the rest of us as well. Because
right.
if they can do that to Mark Baker, they can do it to me, and they can do it to you.
And that's
and they
the
will.
Point, and that's something, I think that's the point he was trying to make, too. This isn't just about him and his farm. It's about what they can do to all of us. They start out with someone like him, and then they go on. You know, it doesn't stop there, and it is all of our liberties that are being threatened. If the liberty of one of our neighbors is threatened, it threatens all of us, and that's just a truth that people need to get their heads around. And it goes back to what we said earlier, Lisa. You know, I'm so proud of him and his family for standing up and fighting this,
because
that is the problem in this country. Not enough people are standing. They're just not, and we've got to change that.
Yeah, and he is just a remarkable example of how we were speaking earlier on in the program about how we're a soft society, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, and
yeah.
I'm sure that people in his community that were faced with this dilemma just slaughtered their pigs, backed off, went away because it was easier, because they were afraid, because it was the road of least resistance, and...
Right.
And, you know, they probably lost money doing it. They're, you know, they're going off onto another direction, trying to make ends meet with whatever. When they could have stood side by side, they could have stood their ground and made it an even much stronger stand. I'm glad to hear that he does have support from some of the other small farmers. But think about it. I had a conversation with him last week when we were prepping for this interview, and I'm going to have him back on the show. He's a remarkable man. He knows a lot about raising food, a lot about healthy foods and what it's doing to the people, and the stories that he was telling me about some of the people that buy his products to relieve the health issues that they have. And Cindy, you and I know we've had this conversation as well. The food situation in this country is a mess. You know, we're being poisoned to death by our government and the regulation of the food that they have, that they're feeding the mass public.
Correct.
And
this goes back to that, what we talked about earlier in the show, Lisa. Everybody thinks the government's supposed to take care of them, and the government is doing a terrible job when it comes to the United States agriculture and food industry. And it, you know, we're much better off. We really need to go back to the local growers in our communities.
Absolutely.
And to buyer beware. And, you know, I get it. We all do. There are parts of our country that cannot produce their own food, and it has to be shipped to them. Fine. That's a good thing.
And that's why you
have things to offer that we can't do. But
right.
The thing about it is the majority of our country, we're not called the breadbasket of the world for nothing. The majority of our country is capable of raising something and being close to their food supply and to making sure that their families eat better. And it is so very important. And I do believe, you know, how many times do we talk about why is diabetes becoming such an issue? Why is cancer seem to be such a on the rise to such an extent that it is, and so forth and so on? And quite frankly, I've come to the conclusion that we really need to look at our food sources and what we're eating, not so much how we're eating, but what we're eating. What are we putting in our faces? What are we stuffing into our children?
Right.
And when you look at what and they're entitled to do what they want to, but let's not put the small guy out of business that we can get. You know, we America is about choices.
Right.
And I want to be able to go to a small farmer. You know, Chuck and I, for the past few years, we've bought our beef, our pork. We've bought that all from lamb. We've bought that from local producers where we were living, and they were just pasture-fed animals that weren't on antibiotics unless they needed them for a specific medical problem. Just like, you know, Mark said, if you're going to treat your child for a cold. But, you know, Lisa,
absolutely,
we need to get back to that. Sorry.
Yep.
I'm getting
okay
on a rant here, but... We really do.
Actually, we're gonna have to wrap it up. We've run out of time. A couple of things that I want to leave you with, folks, before we go. We're gonna have in the next couple of weeks, when I get rid of my cold because I can't speak, we're gonna tape a new Secret Santa commercial. Last year, we fell drastically short of our goals to raise money for the Secret Santa promotion here that we do at Missouri Grassroots Radio. We were able to help one family, I believe, in Southwest Missouri. But it's like we said, you know, times are tough, and they only got tougher in 2013. They're going to get probably worse in 2014. And charitable giving was way down. And but we haven't stopped, folks. We're trying to raise a few bucks. Again, looking forward ahead to Christmas this year to help some families provide Christmas for their kids across Missouri. So go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click the Secret Santa tab and PayPal us $5. You know, so send us a few dollars so that we can make a Christmas fund for some kids across Missouri. If you haven't joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Sign up for our e-alerts and our blog and our newsletter. Join us on Facebook. Join us on Twitter. You can find me, Lisa Payne Nager, Culture Vigilante, on Facebook and Twitter. Also, you can find me at The Patriot Nation, thepatriotnation.net, and on Facebook, and look for me on politichicks.tv as well. And we are just about running out of time here, so we're going to wrap it up. We've got a great show lined up for you next week, folks. We've got some issues here in St. Louis County regarding nuclear waste. We've had some folks on before about that. We're going to talk about it a little bit next week. And until then, thank you, Cindy McGee, for being with me tonight. We really appreciate it. And thank you to Mark Baker of Baker's Green Acres. Don't forget to go to Baker's Green Acres and drop them some contributions for their legal fight. And we'll be back here next Wednesday, 7 p.m., Culture Vigilante, Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.